So, I'm very excited about today, chaps, because we've interviewed a titan of the industry, and she's going to tell us all about her writing career.
Yeah, it's amazing how much she's done. So we spoke to Beth Chalmers, and we talk about all kinds of different stuff, don't we, about writing rooms and how to do pitches and things that go wrong, things that go right. Yeah,
yeah, and treatments.
Yeah, treatments.
Not medical treatments, we should probably say.
No, she's not. She's not. Go into that. None of us are qualified for that, John. That would just be unethical.
But it is like a little bit of a peek behind the curtain, isn't it?
Yes.
What happens on the big TV shows and stuff.
And seeing how you write with a partner as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
That's also very
interesting. To great effect. A nickname for a famous person I wasn't aware of.
Who is Collie?
There's only one way to find out.
Let's listen to the interview right now.
Yeah. Hi, Beth. Thanks for joining
us. Hello, Beth.
Hello. I'm very happy to be here.
It's always a bit awkward welcoming people to our podcast because we have to say, welcome to the Failing Writers Podcast. And then that kind of...
I know.
...reflects badly. It doesn't reflect badly on you at all. It's just... it reflects badly on us.
Yeah.
And that's why we get people who are better than us.
The caveat is we need successful people for balance, don't we? To keep it fair, to balance us out.
Dab it. Well, no, I saw on Instagram and I thought, oh, someone's... followed me called Failing Writers, and I did think a bit. Oh, and then I realized.
Yes,
I realized what it was.
Just us.
But no, I'm very glad to be here, and a bit nervous of the idea of, you know, the fact that you said, "Oh, I'll talk to you because you aren't," and I'll be ricocheting between sort of self-loathing and smugness.
Don't worry, that was just literally us being polite, Beth. We don't hold you in any esteem whatsoever. It was just
just to get you on, really.
Just an introduction, yeah.
Lovely.
So Beth Chalmers is, according to all website sources, an actor, voiceover, and writer. But what's your main thing, Beth? Do you consider yourself an actor who also writes, or a writer who does a bit of acting?
I consider myself a writer who does voicing and a little bit of acting. A writer, voiceover,
actor. It's a snappy title.
In that order.
It depends. It changes, doesn't it? It changes some days.
That's true.
So was that your first dream then, was it, writing? Your main love?
No, it really wasn't. No, my first dream was, sorry about that, was acting. It doesn't mean it's not my main dream now, but dream was acting. And then the voicing happened off the back of that. And then I went to university and I did a play with Olivia Colman and Amy Schindler.
Oh.
And Amy Schindler came up to me afterwards and said, do you want to do some writing? And I thought, all right. So, and then I thought, this is fun. Well, I also thought this is hideous and painful, but a little part of me thought it was fun.
But we'll do it anyway.
Yeah, and it's good to do it with someone else. So
what sort of stuff, what did you first write with Amy?
We wrote a lot of sketches.
Right.
We wrote a lot of sketches. What was the very first?
What became of them?
We sent them off to agents, so we got an agent from that.
Oh, wow.
And we wrote bits and bobs, and I'm not even sure whatever got put on, but got asked to, contributed to shows. Alistair McGowan show, Rory Bremner. I think we sent some stuff to Smack the Pony.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Of course. And then we did Griffreys Jones show.
Oh,
so we
yes.
just did lots of sketches for that.
And did you always work in like a partnership thing then?
Was yeah, I always work in a partnership. Right. Yeah, she works on her own sometimes, but I don't write my own name unless she's on the Skype with me. So we wrote everything together. We have one brain between us. And
so what's that like then? Because the three of us have tried writing. All three of us and in various pairs over the years with
every possible
success.
Combination.
Yeah. So how does that work then when you're writing with someone?
We've known each other for 20 years and, you know, we're very good mates anyway, best mates. So
have we, but we still can't do anything.
I think we know each other's strong points, so we kind of know who to listen to, whose voice should be stronger in each discussion. We get sort of narky with each other sometimes. But we don't fall out. massively. We just have, we get annoyed because we're bartering over every single word.
Right.
In fact, weirdly, I've just leapt to that and said about us falling out, when in fact that wasn't your question. It was just, how does it work? So I think I just...
Yes.
I mean, that's what we wanted to hear that, though. So when you have a fight, what's it like?
Oh, it's horrible. But usually if you do fall out over a particular joke or something, then the guilt sits in quite quickly. And the next time you have a discussion, you're much more amenable. You go, oh, no, that was really funny. That was very funny. And you have to make it up. So instead of going, I'm really sorry, I think I was a bit of an asshole, you just go, oh, no, that was really funny after that. So that's how we move on.
Do you think that's harder? Do you think that's harder in comedy than with sort of serious drama? Because, like, if Amy says something to you and you just don't find it funny... it's quite hard to fake that, I guess.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Really. That is the hardest thing, I think. So we tend to try and work out why we don't find it funny. Because she is funny, so she's not gonna pitch something that isn't funny. Mm. And yeah, like myself.
Yeah.
So we just have to go, I think I don't buy that from this character. I think that's coming from nowhere. I don't think it's left field enough. I think it's too left field. I think it's too young. I think it's, you know, leapt up too quickly, or usually there's a reason.
And a lot of the time, you'll agree with that, won't you, when the other person says that?
Yeah.
You kind of go, oh, you're right. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
It sounds, from what you're saying, like you're actually, you're on Skype together and actually writing with each other, or are you sending stuff backwards and forwards? How does it work?
No, we have Final Draft open and we have the collaboration on Final Draft. So we have Skype open so we can chat.
Yeah.
We never look at each other.
Right.
And then at 2 o'clock in the morning, one of them will sneak on while the other one's not looking and delete.
Oh, well, I have...
I'll get rid of that yeah. Bloody bit.
Well, she's much more computer savvy than me, so if I ever stumble into the Dropbox by mistake, I got a new iPad, so I was trying to work out how the iPad would sync it up to my Dropbox and opening things and playing with the little pen, the Apple pen, which I got very excited about. And I got a message going, are you in the Dropbox? Are you playing with the Dropbox? What are you doing in the Dropbox? Nothing, I just annotated something.
You're not responsible enough to be in
the
Dropbox.
Get out the Dropbox. So yeah.
So, Beth, what was the moment then that you thought, hold on a minute, we've made it here? What was the thing where you get your big break, or kind of you've got a, oh, bloody hell, this is real? What was that moment?
It sounds weird when you say your big break. Like, I'd love to say, well, the first Oscar would have done it.
Yeah.
But no, well, the first time you get paid for something, we sold sketches and thought that's quite fun. Then we got an agent and thought, oh, that's quite good. And then... Oh, and then we went to work on My Family.
Okay.
As table writers, which is where we learnt, in brackets, mainly Amy learnt and told me, how to structure a narrative comedy. So that's when we got out of doing sketches. So we were all sketches, and then it's really learning a craft. And they would throw the script down in the middle of the table, and 8 table writers would be around punching it up. And by the end of it, the main script writer got most of the money. But it bore no resemblance to their script by the time it finished.
Yeah.
So it was knocked like that. But
so was it literally like ravenous comedy wolves?
Yeah.
Eating a deer's body
horrible...
and spewing it back out. Or...
Yeah. And it was that horrible competitive. It was a sort of like the room being conducted by the showrunner.
Yeah.
And you do, you know, and just pitching aggressively. And I didn't really like it.
But did you? So, because I imagine it must be quite an intimidating atmosphere. But did you see the sort of progression in the scripts? Did you feel like you could see it working, or was it just horrible and also awful? You don't have to be nice. You don't have to be nice. No one's listening, Beth.
It's a safe
you can
space.
Just be honest.
There's literally no one.
Sometimes sometimes you are just shuffling words around.
Right. To see if it'll suddenly become funnier if you're doing a different order.
I think it often got a lot better. But there's something, obviously on Friends and Frasier, when they have the table writing, it clearly works for them.
Yeah.
But sometimes just a streamlining of the same, the cohesive vision of not too many writers getting in there is better.
It's always been a bit of a split between the American style of writing and the UK kind of style of writing, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The team thing is the American way, because it's their sitcoms are more about filling it full of gags.
Yeah.
Getting the gags in and getting the laugh.
But you still have, like, you're right, with My Family, there was a high gag quotient and you had to have five per page,
wow.
I think.
Right.
But it sort of means that you have to, the setups can't be, the laughs are never that big.
Mm.
Because The setups. Yeah, because also the setups get interrupted with. So if you have small gag, small gag, small gag, small gag, it's really hard to crescendo to a huge one.
Yeah. Or to tell a story, to be fair. A progress character.
And a story that you give a shit about. If you're really going to give a shit about the character or give a shit about the story, you have to believe it a bit.
Yeah.
And if you are assaulting the audience with cheap jokes, five a page, they don't give a shit. They just think, oh, that's funny. Oh, they're sort of tittering away the whole way through it.
You've worked as an actor in sitcoms as well. How did you find that? Did you ever get to, like, drop your own little line in or anything?
Weirdly, as you're saying, I'm thinking, have I? Oh, God, what have I done?
You know, you were in Some Mothers Do Have 'Em.
Maybe it was a different Beth Chalmers.
What was I in?
You were Betty, weren't you?
I was reading that you were in Think the Unthinkable.
Oh, yeah, all the radio ones. Yes. Oh, you said 100 of them. Sorry, yes.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you do.
Those.
Sorry.
Oh,
those
ones, yes, of course.
Those are the successful branches to my varied work.
Sorry, undermine the whole medium of radio.
Yes, sorry. I thought you meant the BAFTA-winning ones. No, right, yeah, those, yeah.
Sorry, did anyone tell
ones.
Beth that when we invited her on here, it wasn't just to rub our faces in our failure? So many successes, I can't even be bothered to remember
them all. I just jumped to Golden Globes. I'm so sorry. Yes, anyway, let's go straight to, let's pretend I went, oh yeah, well, I'm some fabulous.
That's not getting edited out, that's staying in.
Some fabulous drama and comedy on the radio, yes. Think the Unthinkable, that was great. You didn't really need to stick in your own lines that much with them. I wrote on some comedy. I wrote for Concrete Cow, we wrote for Concrete Cow, which was on the radio, but not a lot of improvisation in the radio comedy was necessary because those scripts are pretty tight. I mean, I work writers like Lawrence Howarth, who's so good. You don't really want to mess around with those lines.
Right.
Do you think that is it sort of informed your work? Because I guess as an actor, you've got to work with some decent writers over the years. Do you think that sort of helped when it comes to putting your own things together?
I mean, recognising good writing is an important step, I imagine, to doing it.
Yep.
But we improvise a lot of our stuff because we're both actors, so we improvise everything.
All right.
So if we fall over lines twice, then we know that it's a horrible line for an actor to say and therefore won't be sold. Mm. And if we're trying to... This isn't quite the answer to the question, but I'm just going to go ahead anyway. if we can't get something done, if we say he's got to... She's annoyed with him because of that, he knows that, and he's got to get that information out of her. And we'll just improvise it until something unlocks.
Yeah.
Until we find out a way that it could happen. Yeah. And then we'll hone it and write it. We very much write for actors. We don't really write... Yeah, we're very much... It's all about the actors and it has to feel... Yeah, we're very keen on our dialogue being right for each character and all that.
What's your best tip for writing comedy?
Don't do it on your own. Do it with a friend.
If you had to give somebody, an aspiring writer, your like key tip, don't forget this.
I think you can tell when a joke's been written. It's making sure that, that's so obvious. Don't overwrite it. I know what. Don't set up and knock down your own joke. Your setup to your joke's really important. Oh, God, everything I'm sounding makes me sound really annoying because I'm sort of half inventing, so it sounds quite smug. And like, I'll tell you, when people say, the most important thing of writing is sandwiches, all that kind of crap. So I'm just thinking.
I like that line because I like sandwiches. So yeah.
So we had a director at drama school who said at one point, in technical rehearsals, it's very important to eat sandwiches because actors love sandwiches. You idiots. Because you're that kind of crap.
There's some truth in that, isn't there?
He likes sandwiches. He must be a great actor.
You can tell a lot about a person by what sandwich they like.
He's been into Baguette Man.
Sandwichology is a burgeoning scientific...
Of course, Gielgud was always more fond of the wrap.
I mean, John likes an open baguette. If it's not on an open baguette,
it's true.
John's not that
very uncomfortable around an open sandwich.
Whereas Dave likes cheap supermarket white bread, plenty of butter, and some digestive biscuits.
Yeah, they don't even have to be together. I'll just get some bread and some things and put them in your mouth.
Just throw the ingredients on the table and see what he does.
Exactly. Like a trough.
Yeah.
Do you have a favourite writing snack, Beth? A snack that induces the perfect mindset for
creativity?
I have
to now write far away from my kitchen cupboard. Because
I'm learning this, yeah.
I can't. It's just procrastination, boredom, thinking that maybe, I can't think of anything funny, maybe a sandwich, maybe a biscuit would help.
A change of scenery. What's in the fridge?
Yeah, just boiling the kettle every half an hour. Ruin the environment. Just keep boiling that kettle because somehow it'll make things easier.
So what is your process then? How do you get in the zone?
I get in the zone. Every answer seems to be the same. I get in the zone because I have a writing partner who, when I started, a couple of other people asked me to write with them stuff. And we'd sort of turn up and we'd write a sketch and then we'd order some wine and then we'd have a laugh and then we'd go home and nothing would happen. And then Amy said, will you write with me? And I thought, yeah, great. She's great fun. We'll have a laugh. And, you know, she turned up with ideas and I think even a computer in those days. I hadn't even brought a pencil. I just, what? And was the most driven person I've ever met.
Well, they're good people to work with.
I mean,
we work
hard, but weirdly what she really hates now is that it's rubbed off on me. And now I sometimes, so she can't, if she wants to slack a bit, she's thinking, when did this happen?
That's good.
My regime is simply 9:30 every morning. The Skype goes the horrible ring of doom that Skype does at 9:30 in the morning, and every morning, and whether we've got a project or not, we're on it, and we create and create and create like more projects. So we just keep throwing it out there
until what, like 10:15?
Yeah, start boiling.
How long is that? Is that a day? That's right up to 5 o'clock, or?
We can write about 5:36.
Wow.
And we'll have like 20-minute lunches sometimes if we're on a roll. We work a bit.
I think we're starting to see a pattern now that if you want to be a writer, you actually have got to spend quite a lot of time writing.
Work and working hard. But that seems to what a great help that would be. I guess if one of you's not quite feeling it on a particular day, if the other one's saying, come on,
hugely,
start writing.
It makes such a difference.
Well, that's kind of why we started this podcast, isn't it? So, you know, you couldn't just hide away from it.
That
actually would be a have you been writing question would come up.
I mean, we haven't been on Skype calls at 9:30 every morning, but, you know, there's little baby steps, isn't it?
But have you written with each other?
We did a long time ago.
How did you do that? Did you sit in the same room?
What we generally did was get about halfway through something and then stop.
Getting distracted.
Well, no, but that's the thing. We used to do it in a distance way of, like, we'd sort of talk about something and then we'd go off and write some bits and then bring them back together.
And how did you feel if you edited each other's work? Did you?
I wouldn't dare edit anything of Tommy's.
I think my stuff was all pretty good, so I didn't really need any editing.
We've identified.
Yeah, it sounds like a healthy, productive way to work. Well, I couldn't touch it.
It just always ran out of steam, didn't it? Everything.
Just drifted off because we weren't ringing each other every day, and because we weren't hardworking professionals. Somehow it failed.
And here we are.
But it makes a difference. A lot of our whip cracking is because we've got deadlines because we're doing shows with deadlines.
And
like you said before, deadlines do a lot for you.
They do.
But sometimes it's the in-between times where we have to keep creating. You just keep throwing stuff out there. And yes, you throw loads of shit at the fan or something like that. And most of it's for nothing.
Yeah.
And it does feel like a massive, massive waste of time. And you think, oh, we've got so many projects out there. But usually one of them will inform the other one. And we're kind of aware that we have to create about 10 projects to every one that will go somewhere. But we sell a lot of treatments and we sell a lot of pilot scripts so we keep enough of that turning over.
I suppose does that mean do you have to have that sort of mindset of like, okay, our job is just coming up with ideas and writing. Our job isn't specifically to sell this script or to get this idea going. You just, you know, is that how you have to look at it every day? Like, our job is just to come into the office, which is, you know, whatever, and just write some stuff every day.
If we're starting fresh, let's say we finished Mystic, the one we're doing at the moment, and we've got nothing out there, then we will just kind of gauge what's going on. Because if you try and write too much, like you said, to a channel or to a brief, then you kill all the creativity and it's not something you should be writing anyway.
Yeah.
But we sort of work out within the zeitgeist, within what's going on at the moment, within the kind of stuff that's being made, what suits us and what we like. And then we look at all the projects we've already got out there. I mean, the stuff that we've made that's in a drawer and the things that we, there are things we can't let go of. Characters we love, relationships we love, and we will keep trying to find the right incarnation for them, I think.
Yeah.
So we sort of do that, shake that down, and then we might write a treatment and then go and sell it so we can get some money to write the script. But actually, we write scripts quite quickly. So we tend to then, we'll write an outline and then we'll write a scene-by-scene breakdown and then we'll just write that script. So...
Yeah.
And then we can take that around because the script, it stops all the silly questions when you try and sell it, because a treatment, the micromanaging and the changing around of it on a treatment is just painful. And you think, well, no, because the whole point is that he's, you know, blind or something.
So give us a snapshot of what level of detail will be included in a treatment then that you put together.
Treatment, I think for us, a couple of pages, and it will... For America, it would always start with, for America, they're always full of why you're the one who should write it, which is really, really limiting, because it makes you can think, I'm going to have to do a stint in prison because I've got nothing unusual to say. I'm going to have to get arrested.
So where does that come from then? Is that a, like, protecting?
Well, no, they just, that authorial voice is, because they... I know they buy it more. It's like if you say, right. I lived on a bench for 12 years and it's a comedy about the people I met on that bench, they would probably go, oh my God, it's amazing. You must have had so
many. Right.
Because
so
they also go, well, then you get the detail. The detail's what makes it brilliant. And if you lived it, you got the detail. Yeah. And they'll believe it more, I think. So we'd always start with that by saying, we mine our own lives, twist it, exaggerate it, try and.
Yes. Having lived as a horse for the last three years, we thought
you
we might have found
a mistake. Yes. It is really difficult. I met someone, let's just say, and the amount of different sisters that I've had. My poor sister, if she ever read half the treatments, she'd think, God, awful. Yeah, and what Amy's, has apparently been through in her life is just horrendous. So
these poor women, we must give them the job. How can they go on?
Ricocheting from disaster to disaster.
How is she typing this with no arms? It's amazing.
Exactly.
She lived for 3 years as a horse on a bench, for God's sake.
I mean, over here, I don't think they mind too much, so I think the treatment would very much, it would be a log line. The kind of, the elevator pitch is quite important. I mean, we wrote a thing years ago called Pauline Peep's Diary, and it was very much Bridget Jones in the 17th century. And
yes,
whatever, as you go, I can picture that, and B, I can picture where the jokes are.
Mm.
And it's, and it does it for you. But as soon as you start going, well, it's about two people, but they're on a road trip, but he's then you're out. Because there's a real problem there. So,
do you ever start with the log line as a starting point?
Well, I think we tend to start with our characters. Actually, that doesn't make sense, does it? What a weird thing to say. We do tend to start with the characters, the relationships, and then.
Yeah.
Because their journey has to be quite unusual. You're only going to sell it if it's finding that nub, it's finding the thing that makes it different. Mm. Finding the thing that A, makes it different, and B, you can see where the comedy comes from.
Yeah.
Different but the same.
But they can always, but a bit like The Office for years, and now a bit like Catastrophe, or a bit like Fleabag,
Yeah, yeah.
So, when you were saying, what would I say to anyone writing comedy? No, I haven't come up with anything. Ignore me.
we'll come back to that later on.
So, going back to that Pauline Peep's Diary, that was the one with, did that have David Mitchell?
Yeah, we had Olivia Colman. We had David Mitchell, we had Sharon Horgan, Rebecca Staton, Tom Hollander.
Yeah, so what was that like then, working with big names? Did that add
an
extra level of pressure to you?
I'd done plays in Edinburgh and known Collie for a long time, Olivia Colman. And I'd done Footlights with David Mitchell and toured with him for the Footlights tour.
Yeah.
And Tom Hollander, I'd just finished doing a Jane Austen radio with, so I didn't, and Rebecca Staton I did a cartoon with in Galway. Okay. So I did a cartoon with her. The only one I didn't know was Catherine Parkinson, who I had worked with as well on something. So, yeah, the only one I hadn't worked with was Sharon Horgan.
Right.
So it didn't feel that worrying, and I just trusted that you just knew what they... The brilliant thing is you know, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, oh,
yeah.
Like Tom Hollander, he just brought... Olivia Colman brought everything that we wanted her to bring and knew she could, and same with David Mitchell. And Tom Hollander just... He adds glory. He adds glory to a script.
Yeah.
He's just wonderful. I would stick him in everything.
Did you just call Olivia Colman Collie?
I did call her Collie.
Right.
That's how...
That's the level of intimacy we're looking for in this.
Well, we were at university together and we did loads of, you know, we did lots of plays and...
Cool.
So, yeah.
What is the sitcom that you wish you'd written, Beth? Is there any that you see and you get really jealous?
I mean, I'm enjoying Motherland quite a lot. I find that quite a high gag question. I mean, it sounds so boring to say Fleabag.
Yeah.
I feel boring saying Fleabag, but it's...
Well...
But I like the fact it's different. It was new, it was different, it was...
Yeah, it's very good.
But also, the minute I say these things, I then go, oh my God, that, the thing that I love most in the world. There'll be something, you know, Modern Family, there you go, Modern Family. I mean, Modern Family is just, the speed of those jokes, and all those jokes are so embedded in character.
I was just going to say, it's so balanced, isn't it? Everything's just on the perfect balance.
Yeah, it does have everything, and all the characters are great. I mean, because everybody can say a different favourite character.
I think there's a real skill, isn't there, as well, in terms of the characters. Modern Family is a great example of how you can have characters that are potentially two-dimensional because they're so kind of in a little stereotype, but somehow they've got so much depth, but they're still in this two-dimensional, you know exactly where you are.
And especially with an ensemble like that, you haven't got much time to service all those characters, and they're quite short episodes. But every single character has their little, I hate the word journey, but they have their own little journey and story in there, and all those intersect beautifully. Yeah. The structure of Modern Family and the characters of Modern Family. Yeah, I'm going to say Modern Family. It's absolutely
sticking with Modern Family.
I'm sticking with Modern Family. Final answer, Modern Family.
lock that in.
Yeah, thanks. It is fantastically, brilliantly done.
Mm. And what have you written that you're most proud of? Are there any like particular moments or just like the whole of a, you know, the whole of an episode or the whole of a series even?
We just get better and better and better because every single thing you write, even if it's something that doesn't gone anywhere, makes you better for the next thing. So it sounds, you know, what we're writing this morning, what we're writing yesterday at the moment, the series Mystic for BBC,
Is this the second series that you're writing?
Series 2 and 3. Mm. So that's what we're doing is we are...
2 and 3, right, wow.
We're doing the final pre-prep because we start filming next week in New Zealand.
Nice, and wow, so we've got you just in time.
Writing series 3 at the same time. Well, yes, in fact, this morning I was writing bits on series 2 after we've had the first read-through out in New Zealand, and then this afternoon I'll be moving ahead a bit with series 3. So it's getting your head in those stories is difficult.
Right.
And you are sort of going, hang on, are they even together now? Did they get together? Did he? So he hasn't asked her? Oh, God.
I feel slightly panicky just thinking about that, let alone reading
it really
the
is.
Writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one point where we were editing the cuts of series 1 and we were writing series 2 and we were story breaking series 3. And every single morning it was about 10 minutes of, well, the first hour of each day was going, wait, hang on, what? Is what?
So, I can't see. The stress of trying to make toast and boil an egg and get a cup of tea going at the same time. I can't imagine that sort of level of stress of having three series of something all running around your head at the same time.
It is. It's painful. But we have a producer, Jen, who it's amazing. She's always in another room on Zoom. So she sets up a Zoom call in the morning. So it's like she's next door.
Yeah.
And we have a WhatsApp and we go, Jen, are you there? And she goes, yep. And you just click the link. And she lets you in, and you can say to her. So, in the visions in series 2, has she seen the rubbish bin, or does he? Do we see the corner of the rubbish bin, or just the whole rubbish bin? Just making that. And don't worry, it's not that dull. And
I'm all in for the bin drama. That's what Yeah.
Yeah. It's about waste
exactly.
management.
I mean, people will be talking yeah. about the bin episode for years to come.
But when you're
I mean,
talking really about bin waste management, you didn't think that was going to be a segue into
anything. No.
But it is. But the other thing about inner treatment is why now? So why are you the best person to write this thing? And the other one is why now? Mm. And the whole climate change and all yeah. that is
yeah
is a pretty hot is a Oof. Hot topic right now.
When did the first series of Mystic air? Was that back the beginning of this year?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think it was what year are we in? No, hang on. No, last year.
Was it for like pre-pandemic?
Was it last year?
Well, I've lost last 2020. Year. We've all lost yeah. a year, haven't we?
Yeah, it did just disappear.
But yeah, last year. Yeah.
No one knows where it is still.
But we filmed up to series 8, up to episode 8 of the first series.
Mm. During the pandemic? No.
Yes. No, and then we stopped. Three episodes short. Three scenes short. Three. This is an insight into how
this
I work.
It's like boiling that egg all over again, isn't it?
Eggs all over the floor right now. Three scenes short of the first 8 episodes. They shut down filming. So we've got one episode in the first 8 one episode in that first 8 where there's quite a lot of words on the back of people's heads. There's a lot of kids riding, a lot of it with ADR to get the story out.
Oh, right.
So they're all riding through the woods and shouting. But they were, thank goodness, so we could get the first 8 episodes out. And then when lockdown lifted in New Zealand, they filmed the last 5. And so the whole first series is out now.
Yes. Okay. Well, because I was watching Simone yesterday. See that it's an adaptation? Is it adapted from a book originally?
Loosely based.
So how did that come about then?
There are some books called Pony Club Secrets written by Stacey Gregg in New Zealand. Yep. And Libertine, the production company in New Zealand, came over to Slim Productions in London and said, we think we can make this as a co-pro. Find us some writers.
Right,
so they came and found us.
Right.
And we pitched for it. They said, read these books and then come in and pitch for the job. So we told them what we'd do with it and what we liked about it and what we would not do. And they said, great. So we wrote a pilot episode and then the BBC said they were interested. And then the BBC said they wanted... Oh, hang on. I think I'm conflating that with another story. we did an ITV comedy where we wrote one and they said, no, we love it. Can you write another one? And then we'll be sure. But I think with Pony... I think with Mystic, we just wrote the one and a massive Bible. A massive Bible that was... 30 pages of story ideas and where it came from and characters and stuff. I think maybe it wasn't that long, I don't know. But yeah, that had a huge Bible that went with it. So the BBC.
And were you actively pitching against other writers? Or were you...
Yeah, I think...
Sort of the first people to come to the table?
Yeah, when you say actively, I mean, we went in the room together just shouting
each
other down.
Over their shoulders.
Proper pitch-off situation.
What a
horse. It's a TV programme in itself.
Hang on, they've put a horse in this. Where are we going to have to start this all over again?
So I think we were pitching. I think there were other writers they were interviewing. But that is the other thing, is you have to sort of work out what they are wanting you to say. Because it's so easy to go in there and say, okay, we'd like something slightly different with this. And you can scare the shit out of them.
Yeah.
And it'll be awful. So what you have to do is you have to say, we love the books, we love this, and we want to enhance this and show this and enthusiasm. Yeah. And then when you're doing it, you say, okay. Because also when you've got the job, then they say... Just go crazy, think big, you know, don't worry about the constraints. Just what would you do in an ideal world? And that's when you say, well, I'd lose the ghost horse because that's quite a tricky thing to keep going. And they go, yeah, great. And you go down that road for ages and then somebody says, hell, this is ridiculous. That's the main thing of the book.
It's about a ghost
story.
Horse.
Can we wind back on that? So
do whatever you want.
You're
not
often
that.
Teased.
Not that. Don't do that. But
yeah. And at the beginning of every series, you're teased with this, just think big. And then they say at the end, oh, but we can only have one bulldozer. So the biosphere, we're not going to have the biosphere. No, okay, fine. A greenhouse is good. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But fair enough, you know, budgets are budgets.
Well, yeah, that's true, yeah.
Yes. And was it fun to write, Mr?
It's more fun to write as it goes on. Because you get to know the characters. I feel I love our characters. I love our characters. And now I know them. I know the kids. And I say kids, they're sort of 18. But I love them. And I know what they can do. And we can write for them. And I will miss them hugely when we stop.
Yeah.
I feel like... And the trouble is, again, with that an ensemble cast, because we've got adults in it and kids in it. And we want to use them all. We want to... And you just... Because it has to be driven by the kids. But our adult characters are also fantastic. And we just... Yeah, we want to use everybody. And every time we do send a script, someone goes, oh, but we miss them. You think, well, so do we, but where are they going to go in 30 pages? I mean, we haven't got time. So, yeah, it's a real shame, actually. You just want to write more and more and more. But I would say, yeah, the best thing and the most fun thing I'm writing is right now.
Wow. That's a good answer, isn't it?
I mean, it's only me with that opinion, if I'm honest. Well, that's
no, that's a lovely thing. It'd be terrible if it was something you wrote 15 years ago.
My heyday. It's just a gentle slide down.
Talking of that, is there anything that you did in your sort of prolific output? Is there anything that you sort of pitched that you thought was absolutely just the best thing ever and it just never got anywhere, never got picked up?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that I think... we pitch that are good and then you see them and it's not because they've been stolen, it's because the ideas tend to be quite ubiquitous anyway.
Yeah.
So, and you see them a bit later in different incarnations. We wrote something called Refuge, which was... Have you seen Home? There's a thing called Home out there, a sitcom. Rufus Jones wrote it.
Okay.
And we pitched it. It's about immigrants coming over from Afghanistan, or asylum seekers coming over from Afghanistan when they were all... Anyway, it was a very similar thing. And our agent was nervous of it, because it was before all that.
Right.
So we were a year before.
Ahead of your time. Yeah, see?
We were just, honestly, victims of our own prescience, is that right? And I think that was quite nerve-wracking. Also, sometimes you just think, I'm not the right person to write this. I don't think I've got the right to be writing this.
That's not an ideal first line for your treatment.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. Anyway, it's about disadvantaged young children. And yes, it's called Hard Times. We have to write a bit of what we know. But you run out of what you know. If you're me, you run out of what you know quite quickly. Exactly.
You've got your sister there.
And she's just riddled with disaster.
When my sister was a Syrian refugee...
She came over in the boot of a car. Said 14 children. First woman to have flown a rocket.
So that's the sort of... in the past, what's next then, Beth? Obviously, you've still got quite a bit of Mystic going on, but is there a big plan for the future?
Well, in a way that makes me sound like I'm very important, like, well, I can't say.
But
there might be a sort of a drama coming up, probably something based on a true story that will be when Mystic is, hopefully more and more Mystic, to be honest. But then also, we need to, more Mystic, at the moment we're doing two series in 1 year. So the idea would be to get another series of Mystic, but just be doing one series in a year and therefore have other projects going at the same time. Mm. And
you've got to bang them out while the kids are young as well, haven't you?
Yeah, not John's kids.
Oh, see, okay.
You have to take that into account when you're writing your stuff. Yeah.
I was thinking...
Not my kids. No, we're not.
It's your children. No, you are. Yeah, you are right. It's the thing you've also got to think about the next incarnation of the cast. So we'd like that to carry on forever and see if we can keep regenerating, like Grey's Anatomy.
Bringing in new characters. Yeah, of course.
So, yeah, but also then keep our adult stuff going because of the adult comedy. There is something, writing the kids' stuff is difficult. Only so many times you can just say, oh, you idiot. And you just think, we miss the whole section of being able to put people in a car in a hurry without a seatbelt. We miss saying they're having a glass of wine. The amount of times you want to have someone just, they've had a couple of glasses of wine,
too
so
much
they say
sherbet.
Something they wouldn't have said. We can't have that. You can't have that. And we've got the New Zealand writers. Yeah. But the New Zealand writers are shocked by it all. I understand that because they haven't written, with CBBC before. And so at one point we had one of the adults calling one of the kids a wanker.
Hold on a moment.
And then one of the kids went out and had a fag.
This is going out in Britain.
Oh, no.
This is on the BBC.
Yes, he is 16, but you can't do that.
People in different countries don't seem to understand the word wanker, though. I've noticed that.
And
they seem to think it's like just calling someone a prat or a silly sausage.
Yeah, they say, but we call everyone a wanker over here.
I was watching something on YouTube the other day. It was some American guy coming to London to try the food. I was watching it with the kids. And then he's just doing the whole thing. And then at the end goes, so let's have a see what you're doing, you wankers. And I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, just don't seem to understand the word wanker.
I think bugger as well, especially in Australia and New Zealand. They say, ah, you bugger, ah, bugger, ah, all the time. And it's involuntary. So we have to go through at the end. We have to edit it out all the time and have to ADR all the lines where they've just stuck the word bugger in. Oh, God, stop it.
I like to think there's just an entire day devoted to this. It's just bugger day. What day is it? Oh, it's not bugger day, is it? Oh,
wankers.
There was a word they used to use in Neighbours all the time.
Drongo.
When they couldn't swear or anything.
You're dag. I remember that.
Oh, you're such a dag.
You're flaming galah.
You're galah.
You're a dag.
Yeah, it's weird when these memories come back. The other day I remembered Lassiter's.
Lassiter's.
When we were trying to redesign our coffee shop. And we were just don't make it look like Lassiter's.
Yeah.
It's difficult, the language. I just think And we love writing adult drama. But to be honest, when we write kids' stuff, we write exactly what we would write for adults, just with the safety compliance in it. I mean, which is but it means that sometimes the it can feel a bit laborious and a bit laboured because you have to do best practice. I know it's a good thing, but you have to say, shouldn't we look for an adult first before you go and do something?
Yeah.
Because you have to show the kids and anything that's imitatable. I want to say that kids can imitate in the playground.
Yeah,
you're really careful about that.
Because I did see, Beth, that you wrote at one point for... You did some horrible histories, or you did at least one horrible history.
Yeah. What
a
dream job.
What was that like?
You spend a whole day. Oh, you turn a whole day with the other writers and you sit in a room and Greg comes along and does a lesson with you. We did Churchill, Boudicca and Napoleon. Whole day, he just teaches you all the funny, quirky, weird things that happened around the time of Napoleon internationally, nationally, the quirks of him, his life. It's brilliant. And then you go away and while you're in there, you sort of pitch sketches, things that might be quite good around this stuff. But it's fed to you quite well because the information he's giving you is so sketch ready or just sketch specific. And so you can find your angle quite well. And then you pitch it, and then at the end, he says, you go away and you write five or six sketches in that area. It's a sort of loosely discussed because so that you don't all go around and write the same stuff. The songs are protected. The songs are just written by this guy, Dave, so we leave it to him.
It's like us with John and his silly, stupid little ditties, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. And,
get off my ditties.
We sent them in, and it was cool. It was a fantastic thing to do. It was just loads of fun.
Yeah, I bet.
It's loads of fun. I'm proud to have been part of it because it's a great series.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
So, Beth, before we let you go, do you have one top tip?
Yeah.
For
okay. Okay. It's not the top tip, and it won't be the best one.
Do you have a sort of like tip?
We're talking. It's in the top quartile or percent. Anyway, let's say. And I think if you can't, if you can't pitch it in two sentences, then you don't have a strong enough engine or conflict the top. Engine or conflict. So you need to know what it's about, where the joke is going to come from. And so somebody wants to do this and they can't do it because of that.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So
if you can't pitch it in two sentences and make someone go, I see how that's going
to... Then it's going to be hazy and lost and hang on, what do they want? The engine needs to be so clear. What do they want and why can't they get it?
Yeah, that's... That's
a good tip.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
I was reading that book that I mentioned before about playwriting. I think it was Alan Bennett who he used to get so far through a play, and then once he'd worked out what it was about, he'd write the sentence that said, "This play is about blah," and then he'd stick that to his typewriter so that, like, as he was writing, everything that he wrote had to fit with that sentence of what the thing was about.
Yeah, so you don't wander off topic. And because we've got a thing which now has 8 episodes in the series, we have a clear theme, I suppose, for all the episodes. So it's not a story arc. It's not to do with the story arc. It's not to do with what the characters want and why can't they get it. It's to keep it cohesive, because we've got other writers involved, because it's a co-pro. You've got to have writers. And so, you've got to. We're lucky to have writers from New Zealand. So, sorry, that sounded awful. So we've got to have writers from New Zealand, because
we've got to.
Also,
yeah.
It's very important that we do, for many reasons.
I mean, they're wonderful and everything, and we have to have them.
Yeah. But I wish they'd stop changing my words.
We're so lucky to have these talents forced upon us.
But we do have a sort of, to keep it slightly, to keep it cohesive, there's that overall thing of where the kids are in their life. And so we do have that. We keep having to go back to that. Oh, I'm really sorry. That's her Skyping me. Oh, hang on, let me just, I'm going to, that's my writing session being calling me. I'll just call her and say, I'm really sorry. You see how hard we work?
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
But this is,
I'm so
perfect,
sorry.
Perfect, isn't it?
I'm just going to say, sorry. still.
This is great. She's so successful that the interview is being interrupted by her
by work.
Writing schedule. Yeah, that's
I know.
The caliber of guest we want on this podcast.
It's just my mum, but I'm pretending.
Yeah. Can you pretend it's can you say it's Collie? Can you just say, Collie's on the phone?
I say, oh, Collie, go away. No, I will not write you something. No, you cannot be in the thing I'm writing. No, stop it. Sorry. Also, I'm quite a messy-headed person, a messy talker. Oh, God, you see, which is why I like writing things down, because when you write things down, you can go bleh, and just all the stuff you want to say. And then you think, oh, hang on, the order I should have expressed this is this, then this, then this, that are lovely.
That's better.
Yeah. And I don't have that. I get overexcited and overenthusiastic, so I've probably been quite messy and confusing. I listened to Zadie Smith the other day on something, and she takes a massive, you ask her a question and she takes a huge pause. And I think, oh, she's very clever because she's very thoughtful. But it turns out that what she's actually saying after the thoughtful pause is really clever and thoughtful. So it's not just just the pauses don't work.
Yeah, you've got to have both sides of that, haven't you? Because if you leave a long pause and then say something really stupid, it just amplifies how stupid it is.
Yeah, what you've done is you've made everyone lean in. You've gone,
yeah. And that's where I've fallen down over the years in my
political
career.
The great thing
career.
Is, in a podcast, you can edit those out.
Yeah, that's true.
Please, all I can say is, please help me out with that.
Tom's really good, actually. He does make people sound quite clever.
There's only so much I can do, though, guys. Do you know what I mean? I'm not a miracle worker. Yeah.
Just one other thing. So you're talking about sort of getting stuff out and onto the page. Do you tend to do that with the first draft of stuff? Do you just, like, the pair of you, do you just go, right, we're not going to argue with each other too much, just get the main blomp and then we can edit it later? Or are you quite specific about...
Yes, that's really... Yes, that... Because it speeds everything up so much. The first draft, if you over-refine everything you write in that first draft, most of that will go. And you think, oh, is it hours? So you pretty much go story, vague placeholder, joke area, coming in, going out, subjects that are covered. So you've done that in the scene by scene, but then you sort of do it in the script form. But you don't, I would say we don't worry about it that much at all. And then sometimes we'll have a little bit of a discussion about a joke, and then we have to remind ourselves, hey, it's first draft, it's first draft. And then and then you're at least honing the areas that are going to stay, because the amount of time we have wasted just writing and rewriting an opening scene, and then in the end you start on page 13 anyway.
Because I think that is something that we've talked about a lot with this. It's just like just the importance of getting to the end of something, and then you've got something to work with rather than overthinking and overanalyzing.
It's the most debilitating thing in the world to overanalyze when you're just starting.
I was reading this interview, I can't remember the guy's name now, but he's one of the big writers from the early seasons of The Simpsons, and he's very well known,
oh, yeah.
very well respected, and I can't remember his name. But he was saying that his process would be just to write any old rubbish. So he would literally write, Homer says, can I have one of those? Marge says, one of what? And then he'd move on and, like, you know, just get the bare bones down onto the page. It didn't matter if there was any jokes in it or not, just so that the next day you could go back and you've got something to work
yeah.
from.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That really does, I think.
Beth, how long will you spend outlining?
So much more time spent outlining than spent writing the script. If you've done the work, if you've done the heavy lifting with the outline and the scene by scene, the outline is really tough. And that might take a week. Outline a series or an episode. If you've got the series already there and you're just doing the outline and the episode, 3 days outlining that, a couple of days doing the scene-by-scene breakdown, and then you can write the whole script in 3 days.
Yeah.
But if you haven't done that heavy lifting, the horrible work, that's the turgid work. It's hard. We really hate that. But the joy when you've got the scene-by-scene down and you're just writing the script.
Yeah.
Especially if you know your characters.
Yeah. You can put the jokes
in. You're never really stuck because you know what they're doing in there. It's when you've got a character walking in and you can't think what they're going to say. Well, they shouldn't be there. Mm. What are they doing there? So if ever you go, I don't want to write this, there might be a reason that isn't your wit. It might just be go back to the heavy lifting, go back to why you put them there. So, we'd spend a lot of time on that.
I feel like I've learned something today.
Yeah.
Well, that makes me nervous.
Fabulous. Thank you, Beth.
I talk so much shit, that does make me nervous. But
No, it's been brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. And also, I don't want to sound like, you know, because I'm saying this is what I do, I like to put a little caveat afterwards and go, it sounds like I'm being smug just because I'm saying this is what I do.
But it is, Beth, it is what you do. That's, you know, don't be shy about it. You are a successful writer by anyone's metric, so.
I'm just aware, I'm also quite pleased with myself, and as soon as that comes over and I get shoot myself in the foot with my own smugness. I'll stop talking now.
Not at all.
Oh, well, it's been delightful. Gorgeous and lovely, and
it's
a cool
been an
podcast.
Honour and a privilege, Beth.
Thanks for doing it, and thanks for asking me on, and have a lovely rest of your day and get writing.
Yeah, we should do that. We should do that, shouldn't we? Yeah.
Now there's the top tip. Why didn't you say that earlier? That's the top tip.
Actually, it'll be like, write something.
Like the end of Strictly Come Dancing, whatever they say, keep dancing or something. Get writing.
doing something.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
lovely
very
to
much.
Talk to you all, and good luck with it all.
Thank you very much.
Catch you later.
Cheers, Beth.
Bye.
Take care.
Cheers.
Well, thank you, Beth. That was very insightful. I feel like I've actually learned quite a lot today.
I made notes.
That was wonderful.
I can't read any of them, but...
Do you know what? I think we should... you know, she was talking about log lines.
Yeah.
I think we should have a go at writing a log line.
Yeah.
For something. Either for something that we've got an idea for...
Not more homework.
There's no holidays here.
I know.
We're in the big boys league now.
But that's two sentences, isn't it? So Dave can't do one of his massive, you know, we're going to do a task and Dave comes back with like some 3-hour epic. Just like,
he's got to keep
sentences.
It very, they very short.
They can be
short.
Very long sentences.
Massive sentences.
Never stop Dave. But yeah, 2 sentences, but very difficult to write a log line or a good log line.
So what we're gonna write it about?
I think we should do it about our like works in progress or work in progress.
Yeah, right, that'd be easier, wouldn't it? Something that's in progress. Good idea.
Yeah.
Or something that you've got in the back of your mind and you want to start developing. That could also work. But something that is pre-existing. Something that exists in your brain currently.
Yeah. So a log line / elevator pitch type thing that puts forward succinctly in less than 30 minutes your idea for something to write.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't set yourself targets you're not going to be able to achieve, Dave. Give yourself something realistic.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. As Beth says as well, it's an important thing to do because it does kind of set in your mind what you're actually writing about. It's one of those things that if you're writing, it's really good to have like one line just to keep coming back to. And,
like a mantra.
Just to refocus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do that.
All right.
Let's do it.
Task for next week. He's so emotional. He's got so emotional about it. He can't string a sentence together.
Where you breathe in, but there's a little bit of spit just dangling. It's like you're very minorly waterboard yourself.
Are you all right, Tommy?
No. Carry on without me.
Hello.
Hello.
Where's everybody gone?